All right. As we near the end of our week, guess what I'm going to talk to you about? Dying well. So let's begin with some secular facts. Every day around the world, 160,000 people die. That adds up to 60 million people every year. And Bill Bryson, the author of The Body, A Guide for Occupants, says that is roughly the equivalent to killing off the populations of Sweden, Norway, Belgium, Austria, and Australia year after year. Bryson also noted that, interestingly, in the United States, no one has died of old age since 1951, at least not officially, because in that year, old age was banished as a cause from death certificates. So since 1951, nobody in the United States has died of old age. He says, by and large, Western culture's view of death often seems to be characterized by avoidance, fears, and a desire for control. For example, in Western society, those with terminal diagnoses often die in hospitals or hospices away from everyone else, often only at the end of a long regimen of treatments attempting to lengthen one's days. Bryson also states, death is, for most of us, the most terrifying event imaginable. Now, this is not a believing author. He's stating the opinion of our culture, and I think he's right. In fact, the Bible would support that. Hebrews 2, 14 through 15 tells us, since the children have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity so that by his death, he might break the power of him who holds the power of death, that is the devil, and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. So I think as counselors, we want to help our counselees be ready to die well, whether death is imminent or seemingly decades away. Now, I'm going to guess that few of us have probably ever had someone come to us saying, I want counsel on how to die well. I've never seen that written on an intake form, and I'm guessing you might have not have seen it either. Anybody the exception to that? All right, we got our exception.
I'm a hospice nurse.
Oh, okay, we have a hospice nurse. So let's consider how this might come up in counseling. I think it might come up when someone is mourning the death of a loved one and they wrestle with questions about God's goodness, the afterlife, and how to move forward. I think that can be especially true if death has occurred in an especially painful or traumatic way that may stir up fears about the actual process of death. I think we might find it happening when counselees are facing a terminal diagnosis or even just the natural decline of aging. They may express fear, uncertainty, or grief about their own mortality or the mortality of a loved one. Then just this fear of death that Hebrews 12, all of us are held in slavery of for our entire lives, some counselees may not be facing death directly but still live with fear of it. That fear can manifest as anxiety, avoidance, or dread, and that may be manifested in an emphasis on health at the expense of loving God and loving others. And then end-of-life decisions. Counselees may be navigating medical decisions for themselves or their loved ones, and as our population ages and more people take on the role of caregiver, they find themselves faced with really hard questions. That includes questions about life-sustaining treatments, advanced directives, and stewardship of the body. So I don't know that it's going to come up directly on your counseling intake form, but I think you may get there indirectly. So as we consider this subject, let's first give some thought to the ugliness of death. As I thought about this, I was greatly helped by Matthew McCullough's book, Remember Death. Most of what I say as we unpack the ugliness of death and why dying is gain has come from him. I found his book to be rich and helpful. It's probably not a book you skim. You probably want to take small bites of them and chew on it for a while. Bacallus says, death is ugly because death is the separation from good things not created to be sundered. He points out there's no confining death to a moment at which your life ends. Its effects are everywhere. Death is not so much an event as a process with a final culmination, a siphoning process that separates us from what we love so that in the end, everyone loses everything. God created Adam and Eve to be forever beings. He placed them in a lush garden where life was never to end. Death was not part of the original plan. But the moment they sinned, we see separation occurring. Separation from sweet fellowship with God. Separation from sweet fellowship with each other. Then separation from the garden. And eventually separation from life on earth. Death is ugly. Separation hurts. And it's hard to make death glossy and desirable. But we can understand why those who have been held in slavery by their fear of death would want to try to make it seem less ugly. We can understand, can't we, why people would be attracted to an organization like Dignitas, which advocates for the self-determined end of life. We can get that, can't we? Trying to make death less ugly and seemingly to exert some control of it isn't the answer, however. Death is still ugly. Death still stings. McCullough helpfully points out, if death is not a problem, Jesus won't be much of a solution. On the contrary, the more deeply we feel death's sting, the more consciously we'll feel the gospel's healing power. The more carefully we number our days, the more joyfully we will hear that death's days are numbered too. And the more we allow ourselves to grieve the separations death brings to our lives, the more fully we will long for the world in which he will wipe away every tear from every eye, and death shall be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore. When we acknowledge this truth, and we don't shrink back from it, we put our feet on the path to deeper, fuller joy in the promise of a deathless world, where what we love won't ever pass away. A world promised to us by the one who is the resurrection and the life. A world where death has lost its sting because it has been vanquished. McCullough also points out that death is ugly because death makes a statement about each of us. You are not too important to die. And in a culture emphasizing self-esteem, that's not going to go down well. Nevertheless, death humbles us. I'm not too important to die. And one of the ways we see our culture trying to grapple with this is by deliberately contemplating mortality in order to help you let go of what doesn't matter and focus on what does. So, should you wish to embrace that cultural solution, there is an app called We Croak. And it will daily send you 5 random notifications reminding you of your mortality. And the gist of these reminders is, don't forget, you're going to die. But apart from Christ, all this approach can offer is to encourage people to get all of life that you can now. In contrast, McCullough says, when I hear what death says about me, I begin to see that it's not all about me. Only when I see his glory and recognize that I am utterly dispensable, am I prepared to be amazed by the message of the gospel. Only then can I see and taste why it's wonderfully good news. Death says you are less important than you've ever allowed yourself to believe. Yet the gospel says you are far more loved than you've ever imagined. You are not too important to die, but you are so loved that God gave his only